You know, little
No, I told you I didn't remember the store. I remember the well in the middle of the house.
Yeah, we had the old
pump, you know, that everybody uses.
Now this Kate Waldron that we were speaking of, she lived up at Slab Town with us too. Mm-hmm. And she had two children. And then there was the Crystals that are Cranes in Bovell now, Helen Crane. Mm-hmm. She lived up there with us too. And this Maud Friel, her family lived up there at Slab Town.
Another one I was thinking that she might get information of or that was raised in Harvard is, can't remember,
Ruby Canfield, her name used to be.
Wheeler, it is now.
Huh?
No. Wheeler.
No.
Wheeler. Yeah, it was Queener.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's it. Wheeler.
Wheeler.
Yeah. Have you gotten in touch with her?
Have you contacted her?
Uh-huh.
See,
well,
we
this,
very
this Crystal
are,
is an aunt of theirs. This Crystal that used to live up in Slab Town.
Ruby's their aunt.
Their aunt, yeah.
Yeah.
Ruby's their aunt. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So she's
well,
real
good,
sharp.
That was good that she got in touch
with her. She could remember
a
lot of
friend
things.
Of ours, too. We used to go down there when we were kids.
Yeah, we used to go down there and stay at the farm. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great deal, boy.
It was.
So your father happened to be there when that fire started.
They were at they were on the railroad working someplace because he brought the train that took us there on the flat cars. And wasn't there 11? They said there were 11 flat cars.
I don't know.
There was
a
lot of flat cars, and everybody.
Well, they thought Bovell was going to burn too. See, and then it bypassed it. See, they got it under control, but they thought it was going to burn too. So.
How come you had no warning? How come it...
Well, it was warned. I mean, we knew the fire was burning in from our place, and my dad had this whole woodshed split with all his winter wood split. He said he felt worse about that than anything, you know, lose all that wood that was already split. But they could see it good, but as I say, the reason they thought it was going the other way and it was all under control. And then
you know where Buell's Butte is, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Can't you see? Well, that's that. Mm-hmm. See, well, when that was finished burned, that was completely black. There wasn't a tree or anything on that for years and years, and it just amazes me when I go up there now and how green it's getting again and everything, because there was nothing there after that fire. And there wasn't any homes. They were all burned. Even that log cabin across the track that Nanny and Dave Gentry lived in was burnt.
Mm-hmm. But the shops didn't burn at all.
Shops didn't burn. Didn't it just kind of
jumped right over them.
Just kind of burnt in that one area.
And didn't burn the shops.
And it didn't burn the schoolhouse.
No, well, that was up farther by the
That
shop.
Was over kind of right straight across from the shops.
What did you kids grab when you left? Did you grab anything?
Well, we wanted to. Grace and I, we never were much to go barefooted anyway. And we came in, Mother thought we should go barefoot in the summertime and save our shoes. And so we came in and wanted to put our shoes on. And then we had our shoes on, and that's the only thing, and the clothes we had on us, that's all we had.
That's all we had.
Uh-huh.
And our brothers didn't even have shoes on.
They didn't even have
shoes.
Two brothers.
And they didn't even have shoes. And we went to, some people got off all along the way, or had friends. Some of them had friends in Deary and Avon and all that. Mm-hmm. And we went here to Potlatch, because we had friends down there. Imagine those lovely people that put up with us.
Mr. and Mrs. George Fulton.
Mm-hmm.
She just died a few months ago, I see in the paper.
Where'd you move back after that? Did they build something?
Well, we had a home. Our father owned a home at Bovell, Idaho, at Bovell, see, and he was renting it. Well, then when our place up at Slab Town burned, why then when we came back from Potlatch, we stayed there 7 days, I think, in Potlatch, wasn't it? And then we came back, and we didn't have any furniture, but you know how people are in a small town. They all help, and then our grandmother stayed with us, and our parents came up here to the Northwestern Trading Company. It's Bergen's now. and bought furniture and brought it back to Bobo.
Hazel always says, everything in this house is just my age. And she was right.
Because she was born in September after this fire in August. So we had that house, and that's where we lived, and we just moved into the house. So we were lucky. Some people didn't have any.
No, most of them pitched tents, you know.
Lived in tents.
Things till they could build a little shanty or something. Because actually all the homes were really kind of shanties, weren't they?
Yeah, we had basements.
We had one big room, and then our dad had built a little lean-to on for our bedroom, you know.
Up a slab top.
Yeah.
How'd it get that name? Do you know?
What?
Do you know how it got that name?
What, slab town?
Yeah.
I suppose because everybody just put up a bunch of slabs, you know.
I suppose.
You know. Who gave it
and just up a little bit farther was Collins, you know. They could just well call it Collins, but just this one little area there they call Slime Town. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know why. Why did it that? I wish I could remember a lot of other things, but I can't think
when
of a lot of things.
When you're kids, though, you know, the things you do remember, most of them are trivial. You know, I mean, you remember something. Except, of course, something like this impressed us. But most of the things you remember when you're small, they really aren't important things. You know? I remember that Mrs. Driscoll in Troy wrote to me one time and wanted me to give a mental picture of, because she was doing this painting on plates of all the towns that had disappeared in the area, you know. But it wouldn't have been off that ache. See, I couldn't remember that much.
Of Slab Town, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because she's painting all the, you probably know of her anyway.
Well, the track
you probably read
through,
her book,
and there was
too.
One, Crystal's house, and our house was right down that way. And then there was the road, and up above that was Waldron's and Hughes's. And then that was that great big barn back there.
I remember the big log barn.
And then there was
I couldn't. It's not that clear in my mind, you know.
To paint it or
anything. So I suggested to her that she contact Maud Friel or
the older people
that lived up there.
Because she lived there, and
because when you're 6 years old and 7 years old,
Do they have a little school there?
Yes, a one-room schoolhouse. They had from the first to the eighth grade. That was our first year of school was there.
In fact, we went 2 years there.
Huh?
We went 2 years there.
No, we went 1 year there, don't you remember? And then we went back to, I guess we did go two years. We were supposed to go in the third grade when we went to Bovell, and they told us how mean the teacher was, so Grace and I put ourselves back in the second grade. Mother
didn't know anything about it. No, we went 2 years there because I can tell by my age because I was so lonesome when she went to school and Mother let me go too, but I was only five. See, and the fire was, I was just barely seven when the fire, so I must have gone 2 years.
See Miss
Crawford is our teacher.
Miss Crawford that used to own the Bovell drugstore was our first teacher. And every year you start to school, she said, do you like this teacher as well as you did me?
She just died a few years ago.
Yeah,
what, 91 or
91, something. Uh-huh. So
was she a pretty good teacher?
She was a nice teacher. She had so much hair and such long, heavy hair. She had such terrific headaches. So she had this this Hughes girl. What was her name? Was it Crystal Hughes? Sylvia Butler. I think it was Crystal Hughes, Maud Hughes's. Anyway, she had her teaching us all the time. She was an eighth grader, see, and she had these terrible headaches. She just couldn't hardly see with those headaches. So I could think of some things to tell you, but I can't think.
Would you go down to Bowville very much when you lived up at the...
Yes, we used to walk down usually on Saturday or Sunday and go to a show.
Well, sometimes in the wintertime, remember?
Yeah, we didn't go.
Well, Gentry used to take us.
He lived across the street. And then he took us in his buggy, too.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, that's the first time I can remember the moon. I couldn't figure out that full moon was following us all the way to that show. That was the big funniest thing to me. That's the only time that I remember taking a lot of notice of the moon, when we was riding in that buggy. You know, Grace and I, oh yes, we had our new coats on. Those little sailor coats with a little white braid, you had a blue and red one. And
sounded like Tara.
Yeah, it's Tara and Anne. So, but then we used to walk down the track a lot, and, you know, and we used to fish a lot up in that area. I remember one time our mother took Grace and I and Duet and Kenneth and took a lunch, and we went up by that little river right there by Slabtown and fished, and she caught salmon. And nobody would believe that. They were up there spawning. See, no one would believe that. And she caught two of these great big salmon. And no one ever caught them since or after that. But those.
So you just catch them around it's against the law, too, you know.
But they were right up there in that little river, you know, where the trestle went over the railroad track.
But mostly we fished with a willow stick and a string and a pin.
Hello, Annie.
Hello,
this is my granddaughter.
This is
Ann Briggs, my granddaughter.
Hi.
And my little great granddaughter, Tara.
Hi, Tara.
Hi, sweetheart.
Hi, sweetie.
How's you?
A lot of hair.
Haven't seen you for a long time, worldwide traveler.
Yes.
And Bobo up there, and we're not helping her very much.
Was it much difference once you moved into Bobo?
Well, it was a big city to us.
It was a big city to us.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But you know, on Sundays, years ago at Slabtown when we were kids, you remember they used to ride those cows and bulls up there? Do you remember that? Over in that field, you know, over there, they used to ride.
Have their own little rodeos.
Have little rodeos, you know, on Sunday afternoon, and just the local people. But I remember that up there, you know, because we had to stay on the outside of the fence, you know, because we were all so scared. We were afraid they'd come right toward us. But
we had a good life in Bobo.
Yeah, we did.
There's always something for kids to do, you know. The old swimming hole and the whole board, you know.
Mm-hmm. Never at lost or what to play, you know what I mean? Not where to go or anything. It isn't like it is now. What am I going to do today? What can I do? You know, sorry. We never had any worries like that.
Where was the swimming hole?
Well, that little dried up stream, you know, that goes through there now. It wasn't dried up. It never used to dry up, you know. But the more they log it off, of course, the less. And we used to dam it up over there. You know, that strip of houses that goes up when you go up toward Clarkia and that way, you know. When we go right across there, we lived up in that area. And we'd go across the tracks and over there in the meadow, and they would dam that up. We just worked like mad and take the sand and stuff, make sandbags, and there's quite a hole there. And about 7 or 8 feet deep right there, you know. I mean, good diving and everything. I'm never a diver. But. And then where it ran over the sacks and everything, it was just a beautiful place for the little ones to wade and play.
And
it ran all the time, so it was always fresh, you know. And,
in that meadow, you know, as you go through Bobo on your way to Clarkia, toward the end of Bobo, that used to be a big meadow in there, and the Indians used to come and camp in there, you know, when we moved down to Bobo.
And there was a lot of camas.
And there was a lot of camas through there, and they used to dig that.
Always digging the camas. Of course, they always came up for huckleberries mainly. We used to have a neighbor, Mrs. Costello, and she used to live down around Kamei or someplace down there. She'd always go out and stop them. And she knew their language, you know.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Okay. And she'd always go talk to them. They were always so happy about it. And we always marveled at the little one, the little Indian children, how well they could ride and everything, bareback, you know. Mm-hmm. Never had a saddle or anything.
You were never afraid of them at all?
No, we weren't afraid of Indians, but we were always kind of taught to be afraid of gypsies. Once in a while, gangs of gypsies used to come up through Camp 8 or Slab Town. And we were all, you know, they always said they stole children and all that.
Well, Mother hid our two brothers that one time at Slab Town.
Yeah.
In back in the clothes closet because they said
they
stole
boys. Their own. I'm sure they weren't looking for anyone.
I'm sure they wouldn't, but...
But see those old wives' tales, and so we were always afraid of them.
We were always afraid of gypsies.
And they'd come around, you know, across my palm with silver to tell fortunes and things, you know.
But they were always in their big wagons and horses and stuff.
Afraid of them. But we weren't afraid of the Indians. Of course, I think because we saw them from the time we were little, you know. And they were just going up to the huckleberry patches, you know.
The gypsies didn't come through that much, then.
Not that much.
No, very seldom.
Actually, that's all they did come through us for. And just to go house to house, and when they had made the town around on the town to tell their fortunes, they'd leave, you know. And they... Everybody said they stole things. We had to watch them. Of course, maybe they did. I don't know.
I think they still watch them downtown a lot when they come in.
They've never changed their style of dress or anything, have they, all these years? You always tell them.
Always have the long, full skirts. And
high heels.
What sort of things do you remember from Beauville, living there when you were young? You know, the stores that you went into, and some of the people that were around when you moved in there. Were the Beauvilles still there, or had they left?
I think they had gone by that time, hadn't they?
What? The Beauvilles? Yes.
Beauville. Mm-hmm.
They had gone by that time.
Bud Noggle says that Bud Noggle is a brother-in-law of ours, and he says when his brother passed away here a while back, he said he found some old letters written to his dad, and one of them was from Mr. Beauville asking him to sell his farm. And Earl Crane says the farm was their old farm up above Beauville there. Uh-huh. Isn't that funny? And he still has the letter.
He still has
just ran across it, you know.
Well, that was nice.
He said he offered his dad $250 if he could sell that farm.
Was that because he wanted to move back?
No, he just wanted to sell his property, you know. In fact, they said, you see, Mr. Beauville owned so much of that meadow area that he owned. He sold it to the potlatch. And Bud said that Earl had told him that they thought they were getting the whole piece of property, but he'd held out this piece where Cranes lived up there for so many years, as Mr. Bowles looked shrewd there. So, no, I don't remember the Bowles at all. We were probably a little too young to remember that anyway, you know. I can't think of some of the other old pioneers up there. Can you? T.P. Joneses, we've probably all their records and everything about them. They were awfully nice to us, so he was a superintendent of the woods and everything. And they didn't have any children, though, and they were always awful nice to us. Have us up for ice cream and cake, a whole crowd.
And they were the first ones in town to have a big sedan car that the doors would shut and didn't have those plastic side curtains and stuff, and they used to come and stop and take a few of us for a ride. They had an 8-passenger car, remember? Had the two jump seats, the 7-passenger with these two jump seats, and oh, we were so excited to get to go for a ride in that big car.
They used to have good ball games and things like
that. Yeah, we did have good ball games and bowling.
Had their own little
league. Were those every week they'd have?
Yeah, they had their own little leagues, like they'd play with Deary and
Troy
and all the
And Julietta was in it too, wasn't she?
Clark, yeah.
Clark, yeah.
Well, Julietta came later, I think, in later years. But they always had a good little league, and everybody in town turned out, you know. Mm-hmm. But, of course, they'd play there one week and Clark the next. And, you know, I moved around.
So it was a weekly, weekly deal.
Good dances.
Wonderful dances. That was the joy of my life, was those dances.
You start pretty young in a small town, you know.
Dancing. Mm-hmm. Then we had Albright's Orchestra.
Basket socials.
Yeah, basket socials.
Okay. Where were the dances when you
up over the Opera House. You know where the Opera House is in Boulder?
That old building, they called it the Opera House. The theater was downstairs.
Is that the one they're tearing down here?
Are they tearing it down?
It probably
There's
is.
One
it's been,
house
it's been condemned for a long time.
Oh, no, 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 I know. Okay.
Beautiful dance floor.
Yeah, oh, beautiful. Just but then it got so, you know, get up
it
there.
Swayed.
Swing and sway, you know.
Swing and sway. Yeah.
Then later they turned it into a miniature golf course up there. When miniature golf first came in, they turned it into a miniature golf course. And Evelyn Denneman, her dad owned the theater and the dance hall. And she was quite an artist, and she drew all the pictures, the murals and everything of golfers and everything all around that whole hall. It's just beautiful, you know. They were another pioneer family, and the Zeglos.
And Bowleses.
And Bowleses. Okay. Naoma could probably, maybe you've gotten in touch with her.
Have you gotten in touch with Naoma Parker?
Yeah, my husband has.
Has he? Uh-huh. She went to school with us.
Because I just had a
little grade at school.
Day.
She's
Lewiston. She lives in Lewiston now.
Were those dances every night? I mean, every week that they had them?
Well, then they had them at Helmer sometimes. And then they'd have Madurey. We made in Elk River. We made them all. We didn't have them every week, did we?
Not there in town.
No, not in Bowville.
Later years. Later, they had them pretty regularly, but not in our younger years. But we made our own dances sometimes too. We had a club. Well, this is when I was I suppose freshman, sophomore in high school. We had a club, we called it the Rinky Dink Club, and every teenager in town belonged to it. And then we'd have some of the kids that could play the piano or something, we'd have them come in and play for us, and we'd all put in two bits or something, and dance, take over the dance hall, just so we could pay them for keeping the lights on and things, you know. Of course, you've probably heard about our light system before Washington Water Power went up there, you know, we had that old Delco system, you know. Yeah, the lights went out at 11 o'clock. They blinked the lights twice at 10:45. Boy, that was time. If you weren't going to go to bed, you better get the candles and the old kerosene lamp.
The old kerosene lamp. Then they didn't come on until 10 o'clock in the morning sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because Mother would get everything ready so she could run that washing machine that they had that. You know, that light on or that special motor. She had to have a special motor on that first washer she had or something.
We were looking at some of the old things over in the fair, you know. And I think we got one of those old washing machines like this. And I said to Sis, I'd give a nickel for every time we pulled those, you know. Stand there and pull them, thought we were abused. Stand there and wash. It was a little better than the washboard, but. Aren't you glad you live in this age, Annie?
Yeah, I can hardly handle what I have now.
When you gave money to the light people to turn the lights back on for you, couldn't do that?
No.
All right. Didn't they used to do that for the movie theater?
Maybe they did, but I don't. I don't.
Maybe Mr. Donovan did or something.
Yeah, he may have.
You know.
He may have. I don't remember.
But he
that.
Had his own power plant for his show.
Yeah, he had a little.
You remember?
He had a little
remember?
Old Delco.
Delco, yeah. Out there at the side, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had that himself.
But some of them may have if there was something special going on, but I don't know about that. Mm-hmm.
Did the town have any, did they get together for, you know, any occasions when you were young?
Well, of course they were.
They had their lodge occasions, you know.
Yeah, lodge and ladies' aid.
All that sort of thing.
And always 4th of July celebration.
Always 4th of July celebration.
That was a big thing.
And then the Chautauquas used to come through, and that was the biggest day of your life.
And that was then the Chautauqua entertainment, you know, just like the tent. They've gone back to some of the tent entertainment.
Tent shows.
They had down there in Bogle, what they call the park there across from the business. But that tent would take up that whole area there. You know, it was such a big tent.
Can you describe more about them? The Chautauquas? Because I don't know that much.
Don't you? Well, actually, it would be like vaudeville, only it was in a tent, you know, and they'd have all kinds of different acts, all the way from opera to comic and everything, all the way, you know. And they'd always have a matinee, and they might come in for 3 or 4 days. I don't remember. I don't think they ever stayed more than 2 or 3 days.
No, I think it was about 3 days.
But anyway, each show was different, though. They'd have one in the afternoon and one in the evening, you know. And as I say, it had a big stage.
And well-lighted.
Well-lighted. And they had their own.
And then they had little plays sometimes. They'd give little skits, you remember, mm-hmm. little plays.
That's why I say it was just like, it was more like vaudeville, only it was a traveling.
Traveling vaudeville is what it was.
Mm-hmm. What kind of themes would those skits have in the play?
Well, they just have, you know, like little short skits like they do, you see them on TV, you know, just... I can't remember it right offhand. But I remember their costuming was just beautiful. Because we'd never seen anything so glamorous as all that costuming they had. We had lots of revivals.
Oh yeah,
tent revivals up there.
Oh yeah, always.
And then we had the circus used to come too every once in a while. Remember? Mm-hmm. Used to be down there in that meadow across from Groves down that way. Remember? They used to put it down there. Mm-hmm. Had the circus. They looked awful big, but I bet they probably weren't.
It was a small circus.
Yeah.
But it looked big to us.
It looked big to us, the trapeze and everything. I suppose they just had one ring or something, I suppose. You know, because it wasn't.
Did they bring in animals?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I say, we thought they were wonderful, but they probably, if we see them now, we probably wouldn't think so. But to your children's eyes, you know, they look pretty wonderful.
Did you go to any of the revivals that they had?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
We loved the singing and the... And there's always somebody going forward to be saved.
Yeah.
And they still, at that time, they still sang the same song that... Billy Graham.
That Billy Graham sings now.
To come forward, uh-huh. they still sang
says,
that old song.
Just as I am.
That's where we learned it.
That's where we learned it, going to the revivals. I said, that's the thing I enjoy about Billy Graham's show, is that he sings all these songs that I used to hear when I was a youngster.
Would people go to them just because it was something happening, more than because it was religious?
A lot of it, I think.
I think we kids went just to have some place to go.
Yeah, probably the older people more serious about it.
But you know, when you're 13 years old, you don't get much serious about things.
We just loved the singing.
We just loved the singing part.
We always went to Christian church.
Yeah. But there'd be a lot of lumberjacks that would, you know, come through town.
Oh yes. Saturday nights you couldn't hardly get through the downtown of Oval. It was so filled with men coming in from the camps. And they were all so kind and good to all of us.
Always nice. The only fright we ever had was when they were IWW
had the strike.
And then I think hearing the grown ups talk kind of put fear in.
Well, Dad would have met us downtown then through that strike, that IWW strike. I mean, there were too many. If it had just been the regular men, I don't think he'd have thought much about it. But I think it was because there were so many agitators coming in, you know, people.
Just like it is now.
Just like it is now.
They just sent agitators in to disturb the whole group setup and everything.
Because they needed that strike because of the people with it had to take their bedding to camp with them, you know. And our father would bring his bedding home after he'd been at camp, and mother would put it in a tub out in the backyard and pour hot water on it, and it'd just be full of bed bugs. So the IWWs,
they needed
8 hours a day and
they needed
clean
the
beds.
Strike.
Well, they only got the showers there.
Yeah,
they got the showers.
Not only that, but they made them put in iron beds then and took out all these. They had these old wooden beds
bunk
and
beds.
The lumberjacks lived in an awful, really a, I was saying, undesirable way, and they worked hard.
They really worked hard. It isn't like the logging
they
now.
They worked 10 hours and they went for 8 hours.
Yeah.
Were you out in the camps then?
No, I just...
He just knows what happened. He spoke and bred.
Then we used to have a lot of bums that were up there by the old water tank and the old oil tank. Up above us. And there used to be a lot of bums down there, you know. I mean, they never bothered anybody. They just hobos, you know.
Yeah. By the old sand house.
Yeah, they used to call it the jungle.
Yeah, you know. The jungles. And then they'd go there and they'd camp out, you know.
But they didn't really bother anybody.
They never bothered anybody.
Mm-hmm. You can always tell when there's a bunch of them up there. They might come to town and get some groceries and things, but they really didn't bother anybody.
Must have been the paper boy. So,
who were the agitators that they were? Were they?
I think it's just people they sent from Spokane, you know, up to kind of. Well, you know, like they do on these riots now. They send people into different cities to get things going, and I think they did it there because it was none of our local people doing it.
Uh-uh.
No local people. But those lumberjacks were so kind and so good to all of us kids.
Well, I was 15. I worked in a lumber camp at 15. So did you. We waited table in the lumber camp. You know.
Where was that?
Up at Clarkia, out of Clarkia, Idaho, up in the Marble Creek. We rode how far on horseback?
I don't know, there weren't any roads that went back, and the train could only get back so far, so we rode up on the train as far as one of the camps, I don't remember which camp. Then we had to ride horseback up to the, way back into the
way woods, up on Grandma's mountain.
And most of us had horses that looked like horses, but she was afraid of horses, so they gave her an old white plug. And they gave one of the other girls, Laura, they gave her a little mule to ride on. And we were going around these trails way up along the river and everything, and we looked way back. And here was Sis on her little white plug and Laura.
Pete's dad just loves those pictures that we had at Marble Creek.
Is that right?
There. Oh. And the pack train, and they used Howard Benscutter was one of the packers, and he used to bring us strawberries and watermelons because he'd known us all our life. And
but they had to pack everything in there.
They had to pack everything up in there on pack trains.
And that wasn't that many years ago. That was what?
1921.
Yeah.
22.
Was that after the fire up there?
Yes. Well, they had that big fire. That's when we came
on Marble Creek, you mean?
Yeah.
That was.
That's when they had to come out.
That's when
Helen and I had gone out ahead, but.
That's
they
had
to take them out over a mountain to get them out.
We had to take
camps.
Them out over grandmother's, take us out over grandmother's mountain. And I couldn't remember what those Haynes were on a horse.
And I said to the man, shall I hang on to these sticks? And he thought I was so stupid because I didn't know that they were horses' hames, but I didn't know.
I know they said some of the horses, because they logged with horses then, you know, and they said some of those mountains were so steep going up that they had to put weights on the horse's neck to keep them, you know, balanced.
Oh, it was terrible.
You know, some of those mountains are straight up there, if you've ever been up in that country.
Yeah.
Beautiful country, but it's sure high.
But so you went up there before the fire and you had to leave?
Uh-huh, had to leave.
I had already gone out. My girlfriend quit, so I quit with her. And so we went out ahead of you.
But myself and Florence Greenwood and Doris Crystal, we came out on the fire.
Yeah, they moved you out over the mountain.
Moved us out over Grandmother's mountain. I was so scared.
What was the work like that you did?
Well, it was waiting table. We'd go to work at 5:30 in the morning, and then we'd
breakfast at 6. You must have gone to work at 5.
And well, Mr. Thomas and his wife had things pretty well, you know.
Oh, did they?
And then he had the eggs and stuff, and I just had to put the coffee in the big coffee pots on the table and carry the food in, because I'd set the table all the night before.
Oh, yeah,
you
always did that ahead of time.
And then we had to mop the, and then we had, after that, well, then we had to clean up the breakfast dish. I had all those dishes to do. There was 100 men there and had all those dishes to do, and all of it, a sack of onions, you peel a sack of onions, and a sack of carrots, and a sack of potatoes. The onions was the thing that got me. I'd just cry and cry. I couldn't hardly. They told me to hold a needle in my teeth. They told me to do everything, but I still would cry and I couldn't hardly see. Then
you worked
dishes.
About 3 shifts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, split shifts about 3 ways. Then you'd have a couple hours off, maybe, or
then you go back for lunch.
Go back for lunch and serve them in and out, and then you go back for the evening meal. You had a long day, you know.
And then once a week, why, we scrubbed the floor with lye and a broom, you know, and throwed buckets of water on it to rinse all the stuff off, because, you know, it had to keep it. This was a log cabin, a log cookhouse that we had. And we had to scrub the floor with big buckets with big old brooms and then rinse the water all off so that they'd be clean, you know. And so they'd be...
Hard
we did
work
that once
and heavy week. Work, you know.
Yeah, hard work and heavy work.
They had those big white porcelain plates about this, and we'd have them stacked clear up like this when we were sitting at the table. And we used to have apple boxes of those big white cups, you know, and carry those on our hips, put all the apple. And whenever somebody, like if one of the fellows quit or left, you always turn the cup up this way. And then if a stranger came in, you know where to put him. And they always ate at the same place. Nobody,
like a family.
Like a family. Nobody ever sat in anybody else's place. Everybody had their own place. And another thing about lumberjacks, they'd come in and they were there to eat. There was never one bit of talking at the table. They came in and ate and left. They never talked or anything. I don't know whether it was some custom that they had developed or what, but they'd come in and eat and go. And in 10, 15 minutes, everybody would be gone.
And you clean it all up again.
Yeah. But let's say you work 7 days a week, you know, it was hard work.
But you got $60 a month.
Board and room.
Board and room.
That
was a lot of money in those days.
That was the most, you could made more doing that than anything else.
Did the lumberjacks give you any trouble since you were...
No.
No. Have great respect for ladies.
They had great respect. In fact, some of them used to come up at night and want to know if I wanted to walk across town when I worked at Clark here at the ranch. Because they knew it was dark going across the meadow, that they were going over to the pool room, and I wanted to go see my friend Agnes Gallagher that owned the drugstore there in Clarkia, and they'd wait till I got my dishes done. Sometimes they'd help me, and then they'd walk me over. And then when they'd get ready to go home, they'd come to the drugstore to see if I was ready to go, and then they'd walk me back home.
Oh, they were
they were wonderful.
Never any trouble.
They were awful nice to me.
They never, even if they... I've heard that they, you know, would drink quite a bit even up in the, you know.
They didn't do as much drinking in camp.
No.
Not in camp.
I never saw any drinking in camp.
No. They would just, most of them saved their money, and then they'd come to Spokane, and probably in a week's time they'd come back and were broke, you know. Spend it on wine, women, and
songs. I said to the man I was cooking for, "My, these men think you're an awfully good cook." He said, "Well, that's because, Viola, he says that they're hungry." He said, "But wait till they get their stomach all filled out good, and they'll start complaining about the food." Or either take their money and leave, you know.
They really set a table on those lumber camps.
Oh, yeah.
They really did. They had everything.
Did she have a cookie?
She's been sick.
Oh, she's still on her diet?
Mom. When you finish, I'll tell you.
I can't think.
Would your mother would stay in town with all the kids?
Yes, she took care of them all. Mm-hmm. She had a big job to do. She had 11 of us. Myself and Grace, and then we have two brothers, and then just of course
three brothers.
Yeah, but I mean, there's just four of us, and then you know, Mabel and Ellen,
and then the rest of them came
and then
along.
The rest of them came along. Dee Dee's father was our oldest brother, the Nielsen that lives at Troy. He was our oldest brother, the one that died here a couple of years ago.
Did you two have to help out a lot at home?
Oh, yeah. Everybody had to help out.
Everybody had to help.
In those days, there were lots of chores, though, you know, for children to do. I mean, you had to keep the old kerosene lamps cleaned and the chimneys washed. And
trim the wicks and fill them.
And there was always wood to split for the boys and things like that. I mean, there are a lot more chores than children have to do now, you know. They don't have that many. When I look back, we could have been a lot more help than we were. I'll tell you that.
We could have.
I think Mother was pretty easy on us, really, you know.
Because she had to wash on the board for years.
Yeah, and then as I say, we'd complain on when we had to work the old washing machine, you know.
Back and forth.
We never came home to a cold lunch or anything either. I don't know how she did it. Never did we ever come home to a cold lunch or anything for school. She always had soup or macaroni and cheese or baked beans and made wonderful baked homemade bread. You know, of course, all of them did in those days. Our big family, our bread box was one of those great big lard containers from the lumber camps. That was our bread box. Not this high, you know. It's like a big drum.
Well, we had to do the dishes. I could do them on the stove. I could stand on a box by the cook stove and have my dish pan, and they put the other dish pan to drain them in down on a kitchen chair, and Grace had to wipe them. But that's about the only real.
We never did have much argument about that, though, because I didn't like to wash them because I didn't like pots and pans. And she didn't like to dry them, so we got along all right in that score.
But I mean, we didn't have too many chores to do, really.
As I say, we could have helped out a lot more.
Oh yeah, a lot more. I think all children could help out a lot more than they.
Did your father continue to You have to stay away, you know, throughout your childhood? Would you just see him on weekends and then, well, in the winter?
Our father died in 1926, so he's only 49 years old. So,
he
doesn't sound like you could have seen that much of him when.
No, we really didn't.
No, we didn't. Because he was gone, because they'd worked 12 and 13 hours a day then, yeah. You know. They didn't have any 8-hour law, 8-hour deal. He'd come home when he could, and so it's. Mother was always there. She was seldom ever gone. She didn't have time to go anyplace, I don't think.
No.
Unless it'd go to help a sick neighbor or something.
Is that the first time that you worked out, when you worked in that?
Well, the first time we ever went out to work, Grace and I went picking strawberries.
Yeah, if you can call that going out to work.
Drury's at Drury.
Oh, yeah.
We went down there. What was it? We down there a week, weren't we?
And
we didn't make enough money, and when we brought a crate of strawberries home, our father had to pay for it. I think it was two and a half.
We didn't
make our board. And that was the first time we worked out, went out on a job, wasn't it?
All we did was, we all slept in one bed. We made one great big long bed in their bunkhouse down there. And all we brought home was this crate of strawberries and the 7-year itch to all the kids.
All the kids.
Then Mother really did have work.
Yeah, because she had to change things every day, you know, bedding and wash and iron. And you couldn't use sleep in the same bed, you know, you reinfected yourself. But then, we used to babysit, take care of, you know, girls.
Why did you get that itch?
Well, somebody in that group sleeping when we were all put our bedding and everything together, somebody in that group had it.
We never did.
And they passed it along to every one of us. And then we passed it along to all the kids at home.
What was it? I don't even know.
No, I don't think you even have it anymore. No, it's a rash that you get, and it starts like little blisters between your fingers, and it just starts itching, and then you might get it most any place. You scratch it, and then it breaks out, it's a continuous thing to doctor it, to get rid of it. As I say, I you don't even hear of it anymore.
No.
I don't think anybody ever has it anymore.
But there were sure a lot. That was our first job. That was our first job, going out to work. We didn't do anything very good.
I'm surprised they ever let you two out of the house again to go work.
Cheaper. It would have been much cheaper to keep us home. Wasn't our fault, though. I don't know. One of those things. Mother often laughed about it. I'm glad she could laugh about it. But Mother had quite a struggle after my dad passed away, you know.
She still had some pretty young kids.
The youngest one was 4. All the way up.
Were you married by then, or were you still?
She was married
by
the time.
I was married when my father died.
But I wasn't.
I was married in 1924. I'll be married 50 years this October.
So we're going to celebrate that.
Yeah.
Shall we?
We were just discussing that the other day.
We're going to get going on it, too.
Yeah, but... So that's how long I've been away from Bowl.
You left then?
Uh-huh, I've been away from there for over 50 years, because I was up to Grandma's, you know, taking care of Dad. Mm-hmm.
What, between the time when you worked up at Clark, what did you do between then and when you left?
Well, then I came up to Spokane. Here.
Right after Clark?
Well, I was about to, I went to school in the next year, see. And then the next year, my dad was sick and Grandma wanted to go east, and I came up here and stayed, you know, in east. And then that October I got married when I was 18. And then we lived over there at Grandma's.
But then she worked too.
Yeah.
She worked for years and years here in town. And I used to work at Parker's store there in Mobile.
Oh, yeah.
I worked there for about 3 years. And, of course, as I say, we'd work when we were like 15, and we'd work at the lumber camps in the summertime and then go back to school, see. And then I came to Spokane and I worked up here for a few years, and then I went back home and worked in Parker's store for 3 years. Then I came back up here. I guess I haven't been up there to live for I don't know how many years, good many years too.
When did you work in Parker's store?
I can't think of the years, but it was...
was it before the Depression?
Right, at the Depression when I came up here, because it was about 1927.
You were working there when I graduated from high school.
Yeah, but I'd worked there before, too. I worked there quite a while before. Mm-hmm. You graduated, what, in 31?
31,
so it was probably... I probably worked there from maybe 28 to 31 or something like that. I know I worked there 3 years and 2 days exactly. I remember. Well, I remember because I worked at the Astor here in Spokane, and I went down to work at Parker's, and I worked there 3 years and 2 days, and I came right back up here and started in just where I left off. I was learning to pack candy at the Astor at the time, and I came right up and they started teaching me the candy again. That's why I remember so distinctly, because I thought it was so funny. That was almost exactly 3 years, and that was Depression time. That was just, you know.
Because I worked at Cook's Nut Shop during the Depression time.
And that's the reason I left Parker's, because they gave my job to their son, you know, because naturally, which was right, you know. But Neelan came back then, and he was having a rough time, so they put him. Because it was just general merchandise, you know, how Parker's store was. You know, measure off a yard of lace and then sell a pair of logging boots, you know.
Just one thing after another.
Yeah. So, but they were great people to work for, Mr. Cryer and Mr. Parker. They were wonderful people.
He died, didn't he? Mr. Cryer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Cryer.
They're all dead now. Even Neelan, I guess.
Can you describe that, the inside of that, the Parker store?
Oh yes, I can almost draw you a picture. Post office was down in the left-hand corner. And
is that the front end of the store or the back
end? No, the back end, way back to the back end on the left-hand side, near the back door. Here's the little post office there with all boxes, everybody's boxes and things. And the windows were around one side. And Golda Coy and Sophie Zeglow then worked in the post office at that time. And then on the left-hand side of the store, above the post office, was all the men's work pants and the logging boots and everything like that. Then down the center aisle was yardage and lace and crochet thread and everything, you know. And then on the far side was the groceries. And they had all the groceries and things over on that side, so it's just a general merchandise store, you know.
That's a no-no. That's a no-no. That's a no-no. No.
Do they have a pretty good selection of stuff there?
Oh yes.
If you,
you bet they did. They did. They had a. There was another store there in town, Grove Store, and it was another just general merchandise store. So the two of them, they were pretty good competitors, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they sold the same kind of stuff.
Same type of thing, both of them.
Uh huh.
But you could get a pretty good selection. You know, a lot of it was pretty hard on the merchants though, after people got cars and things, because they could get it cheaper by going to Moscow and things, you know. It's kind of hard on the merchants there, you know. But you could get just about anything you wanted.
Was the competition between the Grove store and the Parker store, was it pretty friendly? I mean, were they real competitors, or did they just share the business? You know,
I don't know. I don't I don't think they were.
I just think they shared the business.
Yeah, I think so.
Because we used to.
And
they didn't have huge sales and try to.
Oh no, nothing like that. And they both had their delivery teams, you know. And
teams that would.
You just call up and ask what you want, and you'd get it delivered, you know.
They'd bring it right to your door, horse and buggy, right to your door.
Yeah, so. So people didn't have to go to town and carry anything. Of course, as I say, that was before everybody had cars and everything, you know. And both our brothers were delivery boys at times. My brother Dee, that's Dee Dee's dad, you know, he used to deliver. And they had to take care of the horses and everything, you know. And he was just a kid, I don't think he was more than 12, 13 when he was doing that. Mm-hmm. But that was long before I worked down there.
How long did that store be open during the day? Do you remember?
Well, I don't think their hours were much different than they are now. I think when I worked there, I worked from 9 to 6.
6
to
9.
And a couple nights a week. No, only I think it was only one night. One night they stayed open.
Saturday night, wasn't it?
Saturday night when the lumberjacks came to town and everything.
And they stayed open. They
is that when a lot of lumberjacks would they show up there?
Yeah, that was their only time they could buy, you know. And no, I don't think their hours weren't any different than they are right now, really.
Do you remember some of the people like Pat Malone?
Oh, yes. I should say so.
Yes.
He was a real character.
He was
just part of the town.
Great person. He was just part of everybody's family, I think. He was so kind and good to everybody.
I've heard he was really good to kids.
He was just wonderful to children. Just, I don't care how big they were, they were all kids in his eyes, you know what I mean? Like the older boys, me 17, 18, he was nice to them, and he was good to the little kids, and I can just close my eyes and see him yet.
I can too, and I can see him. He'd get going real fast in the bootleg days, and everybody used to say, well, Pat's got a clue.
Got a clue, Pat's got a clue, he's going, he walks so fast. Well, I think he was great for the town of Old. I think he was real good.
I can still see he and young Dave Ellison sitting in here.
Yeah, old Pat Malone was a real nice old man.
I say there's probably a lot of others that we remember if we could just think of them, you know.
That was Billy O'Meara. He was real good too.
He wasn't that type. But
no, he wasn't that type. He just worked in the city area. But
you've probably talked to some of the Davids. And
not yet.
Haven't you? There's not many of the Davids left, is there?
I think Mary and Henry are the only ones. But
they live in Lewiston, don't they?
But I thought maybe.
Do they live in Lewiston?
Yeah.
Mary and Henry do.
But
they
could probably give you a lot of. He could, because he worked on the trains and everything.
Yeah, he worked on the trains with Dad, didn't he?
Yeah. Henry braking did. Or something. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And have you talked to any of the Hayeses? Mm-hmm. They lived up there in Bogle a long time.
Georgie O'Keefe was
Georgie
a Hayes.
O'Keefe.
She would probably just be able to give you a lot of information. But she lives in Seattle someplace, and I don't know where. But she has Bob Denneman, I think, lives in Lewiston or Clarkston.
He lives in Lewiston.
He lives in Lewiston.
What's his name?
Bob Denneman. And this would be his mother-in-law.
I don't know what her name is now.
I don't either, since she remembered. But she could probably give you a lot of information because she was there since she was just a girl. And
yes.
And,
Giving you that.
Oh, we're going to stay in the car. We're gonna go home and work.
Mm-hmm. Well, say, I don't think we're being much help to you.
Well, it's hard for me to, it's hard to concentrate with somebody. For me, at least. I know the microphone, when you're taping like this, the microphone is gonna pick up the kids so loud.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
It's gonna pick up the baby? Oh, I never thought of that.
Picks up noises like that real loud. Yeah, it's sort of annoying because it picks up, just, I mean, that's a sharp noise.
Uh-huh.
And it just, you know, we can block it out and we don't even hear it very much.
Uh-huh.
But the mic will just, you know, if you go like this, that'll drown out. You know,
is that
a mechanical noise like that, it'll, you know, it really picks up loud.
It's bad.
Yeah, we should have at one point gotten a better mic than we got. We didn't.